everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Attendance Bias. I am your host, Brian Weinstein. I've mentioned a number of times on this podcast that when I'm not spouting gibberish with strangers about fish, I am a middle school teacher. I try not to offer too much personal information on the podcast for obvious reasons, but I am overly thrilled to say that today, my personal life on the podcast and my professional life at school intersect in the most glorious way. That way is through today's guest, Jared Cowan. Jared is the lead singer and guitarist of up-and-coming jam band Baked Shrimp. If you frequent any of your local music venues or attend pretty much any summer jam band festival, you've seen Baked Shrimp's name on the lineup. The trio frequently combines progressive arrangements and dexterity with extended fist-pumping jams. In other words, they rule. Oh, and did I mention that Jared was my student in 7th and 8th grade? Teachers often say that the best part of the job is when we see the legacy and success of our students as they grow older and into their adult selves. Jared and I were lucky enough to spot each other as fish fans when we were teacher and student. Since then, we've gotten to know each other as people, not just in school, and I've also gotten to know Jared's family well, often seeing them at Madison Square Garden or various other shows in the tri-state area. So as Baked Shrimp prepares to release a new album, it only made sense for Jared to make an appearance on Attendance Bias. For today's episode, Jared chose to discuss set 2 of December 31st, 2010, New Year's Eve, and one of the best New Year's Eve shows of Fish's career, and one would argue, a turning point in the jamming style of the 3.0 era. We break it all down. So let's join Jared to talk about middle school memories, high ceilings, low floors, and the meat stick heard round the world as we revisit set 2 of New Year's Eve 2010 at Madison Square Garden. Jared, welcome to Attendance Bias. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a long time coming, given our history of going way back. And, you know, I'm stoked to be able to finally get on Attendance Bias and be your guest tonight.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you. I know we have been talking about this literally for years. So it has been a long time coming, and this is indescribable, I have to tell you, as a professional, not a professional podcaster, but as a teacher, it really is kind of a full circle thing. Those of you listening at home, today's guest, Jared Cowan, is a former student of mine from middle school. So we've known each other for how many years now? 12, 13?
Given the show that we're about to talk about, and it's actually one of the reasons why I picked it, I would say it's 13 years.
Yeah. So it's been a while. And over the years, I've gotten to know Jared and his family. And it's unique. I could just speak from an educator's perspective. Things always start as professional. But I can tell you, once Fish gets into the conversation, there's like an instant familiarity and a comfort between parents, teachers, students. And I'm so glad that we've stayed in touch over all these years.
Absolutely. It's been a while since now I've been in school, I guess, since grade school, I guess. I mean, I graduated college a few years ago. But, you know, from the mindset of like, you never know what your teacher is going to be like, it's kind of cool to have a fish head as a teacher.
For those of you listening at home, Jared, we have a lot to talk about today. We have first the show that Jared chose, New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2010 at Madison Square Garden, landmark show, both personally for each of us, but I would say professionally for the band as well. But also, Jared is the lead singer and guitarist of up-and-coming band Baked Shrimp. If you're in any sort of jam band circle or circuit, you've certainly heard of them or at least seen their name on a poster upcoming playing in a town near you. We are currently recording in October, hopefully for a release this coming January of 2024, in which Jared, you and the band are currently getting ready to put an album together. So can I ask you, what is similar about this upcoming album so far, and what might be different from people who already know about Baked Shrimp?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we took a different approach on this album. It's going to be our fourth studio release. Every album release in the past, what we've done was we've tracked drums and then tracked bass and then layered everything, guitar, and to click tracks and all that. Whereas while we do love those albums, you know, and they're very special, what we thought was missing about those a little bit was that live atmosphere that we bring as a band and the connection that we really have and we've built for the past 6 years, the three of us. When we went to the studio this time, rather than like going back and forth between a friend's house and just like a lot of sessions, what we did was we rented a space in upstate New York and really like in the middle, like no service, no reception, but it was in a very nice state-of-the-art music studio with a great producer, engineer. And what we did was we tracked it live. So everything has that live energy to it, but then also, you know, we go and we overdub certain things such like vocals and guitar solos and stuff, but we wanted the balls of it, the overall ground of it to be feel like it's live, you know, rather than just straight studio, you know, while also making sure that we have those, you know, studio polished sound. It's you know, we're really, really stoked about it. It's songs that we feel really strongly about. It felt right also for us to finally do a self-titled album. So it's a self-titled album, songs that we feel really great about. And we feel like it really captures what Bass Shrimp brings to the music scene.
You guys bring a lot to the music scene. You know, I've showed up to a number of your shows and man, I'm always impressed. And speaking of shows, my understanding is you have a release party scheduled for this self-titled album. Where and when is this?
Yeah, so that show is on the same day the album comes out, January 12th, 2024. That's at the Cutting Room in New York City, right in Midtown, right by the Garden. It's close. It's, you know, you just hop on the train and walk a little bit and you're at the Cutting Room. So we hope to see a lot of friends, family, fans, you know, to celebrate a super, super special release. And I guess by the time this episode airs, we will have had released our album release tour as well. So if you're not in New York City, you know, and you want to celebrate the special album with us, then we hope to see you in the city near you that we announced.
To bring it back a little bit, to me, it's always hard to define a band's sound. It's almost like when you're on a date and you say, what kind of music do you like? There's no really easy answer for it. What would you say are some of Baked Shrimp's, as a group, your collective primary influences? Like on Amazon, if you like blank, you may like Baked Shrimp.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like you always get the person that says like, I like everything. And then exactly. You know, everyone wants to roll their eyes a little bit. And then you start naming things like, oh, well, I don't like that. You know, we do like everything. We do a little bit of everything. I mean, we go bluegrass, we go heavy rock. We did a show recently in North Carolina where we just couldn't read the crowd right. It was a unique setting, very unique setting on the beach by the Wilmington, North Carolina, Riceville Beach area. Very, very unique. I will leave it at that. So we couldn't decide which the crowd would have liked more. So the first set we did like 15 4-minute punk tunes, like like all songs that we don't usually play. And they're all like punk songs, like straight up. And then the second set, we just like kept the dance vibes going the whole time. We probably did like 5 songs, just all like 4 on the floor. So, you know, we can, if you want to hire us for your party of any occasion, no. But, yeah, we do a little bit of everything. You know, we're all very heavily influenced by different artists. Scott's big Beatles guy, very into They Might Be Giants. Jagger is big on the Southern rock stuff. Allman's in the Band. And I come from the jam world of Fish and The Dead and lots of smaller jam acts, also with classic rock. And I grew up with the jazz influence, playing in jazz bands and stuff throughout middle school, high school. So, you know, there's a huge, huge range of things we can hop into at any given moment, really. So I guess like if you look up Baked Shrimp, I guess I think it says progressive rock trio, you know, which is what we are. We're progressive, you know,
it tells you a lot of just things. Enough. It'll tell you just enough to look a little bit more. If someone has never heard of your band, but was interested to hear you, can you name which album, song, or live recording? Like, what would you recommend?
Yeah, so I would definitely say, well, actually what's cool about this too, and fingers crossed if all goes well, but we should be having our second Prono Tapes out by the time of this interview as well. Prono Tapes is our like compilation of live material we feel really strongly about. So that's cool because in the sense that it's just like we hand our engineer like 15 mixes and just say, you know, just have at it. Because I usually do the live mixes for like just a regular soundboard that goes up on Bandcamp. So yeah, if it's going on like distribution platforms, I want like a professional to be able to do it. So, you know, it's, you know, we pick some of the stuff we feel really strongly about and it's all live. So if you want to hear some Big Shrimp, I would say the second Prono Tapes, which isn't out yet, but at the time of this interview, hopefully is. Or just like some live, like go on our Bandcamp and sort through a bunch of the live stuff. I think also the studio, just to know the songs, listen to some of the studio stuff. I mean, we have so much material at this point where like each album is roughly about 12 songs and we have four of them. So you have math, 12, 24.
I'm going to leave it to you. I'm the English teacher.
48. Yeah.
Ah, 48. That sounds right.
We have roughly call about 50. We probably have about 50 recorded songs. So you learn those 50, but then we have like another 150 that aren't recorded. So it's good to dive into the live stuff and learn a lot of the material and also some of the more technical side of things.
Well, you referred to how prolific you are. You know, you guys create a lot of music. You're on tour. In addition to studio albums, you have live releases. And I mentioned this at the very top of our conversation. It seems like you're always on tour. You know, I follow you guys on Facebook and it seems like 2 weeks can't go by without new dates being announced. You know, it's October at the moment. I'm waiting for the spring tour to be announced because it seems like you're booked through then. How do you guys stay sane on the road?
Sometimes we do. Sometimes we don't. You know, it's like, you know, we're in it to win it and we all have the same goal in mind of what we want to do. So just trying to eat healthy, you know, trying to get some exercise in when I can and warming up and just
you guys play chess or checkers or anything? Like, how do you, because you're always on the road. Really.
Not much of a board game guy. A lot of it, we're also a small team. It's not like, you know, we have a crew of people. Like, and for me personally, like an 8-hour drive really is nothing. Like it goes by so quick because I'm editing a soundboard or I'm getting video work done or I'm scheduling promo posts or running advertisements or whatever. Or booking hotels or tour managing, you know, there's a million things I could be doing at any given moment that like I have literally driven 8-hour drives and like have been like, shit, like I have to like close my computer when I'm in the middle of something because we got to the next place. But like, why can't this be like a 10-hour drive? You know, like literally it happens. Like I keep myself busy. And, you know, I mean, like busy sometimes is stressful, but busy is also good. You know, it keeps your it makes those drives go by really, really fast. It, you know, keeps you sane.
And sometimes not.
Well, when it's just, it gets, you know, it gets overwhelming a lot. You know, there's definitely, you have those moments where it's just like, you know, there's a lot going on and got to get to the next place and there's things that aren't done yet. And, you know, so, yeah, but that's part of life being on the road.
And Jared, what is Big Shrimp Socials so that anyone interested in listening to this can find you guys online?
Yeah, Big Shrimp Music on everything. So, Facebook.com/Big Shrimp Music, Instagram, Big Shrimp Music, TikTok. We're in the TikTok game now. That's where I start to feel old, actually, is like, that was the first thing for me where I'm only 25, but I still can't figure out TikTok to save me. So, you know, but so we're on it.
I have my students give me lessons on how to do TikTok so that I can start attendance bias on there. I have no idea what's going on over there.
Because I do video editing. I do it all the time. It's just like, I like a laptop. I like a screen in front of me.
Me too.
I
don't
like a small little computer, but like, I have to, you know, like I'm good with my phone too. I'm good with technology and all that. Just like the fact of like editing like these viral videos in like this small little screen, just with not many tools. Just, I don't know. I don't get it.
I'm the same way. But ladies and gentlemen, check out Baked Shrimp. Give them a listen. Give their jams a listen. Their songs are fabulous. But and I don't want to say, but their music, their jams are also good. They're kind of one of the same. So check them out wherever they are. If they're coming to a town near you, chances are they are, certainly within a calendar year. So keep your eyes open for it. Jared, we've heard you as a musician, as a promoter, but let's hear about you as a Phish fan with the Attendance Bias Lightning Round.
Attendance Bias Lightning Round.
So when was your first Phish show, and what do you remember from it?
We're going to get a unique answer on this one. 8898. And I remember nothing, not because of probably what most of the people that go on here and say they remember nothing, because because literally, I don't know of a single person in the world that could remember something from 4 months old. So 8898, Merriweather Post Pavilion, the Sabotage show, Sweet Jane, Ficus. I have no memory of it for a different reason than most other Phish heads would say.
For everyone listening, Jared and I first met. He was my student, but also a former school psychologist who no longer works at the school that I teach. He and I formed a rock and roll club for after school for kids who had talent or not, didn't really matter, but kids who wanted to play music and didn't have a place to do so. So we got a drum set together. The school psychologist was, you know, a senior citizen. He had like a world's worth of guitars and amps collected. So he'd bring in these, like, I don't want to say ancient, but vintage, like amazing guitars and amps. And any kid who wanted to play music, we would just play. And we sat down, I was on the drums, and you started playing Sneakin' Sally Through the Alley. And I stopped and I said, wait a second, I know you, kid. And when I asked you about Phish, you said you had been to like 25 shows or something at that point. And when I asked you your first, you told me
that. Had to be more than that.
Yeah, probably.
Had to be way more than that at that point.
Yeah. And I said, well, when was your first show? And you told me that. And I did the quick math in my head. And I said, wait, you couldn't have been, you were born in 1998. And I remember that story. That's one of my favorites. But what was your most recent show? And what did you think of it?
My most recent one?
Yeah.
So for the first of the last? I went to the first night of the Garden shows they just did. The seven.
The summer after the, of 2023.
Yeah. So, well, as of this interview, it would have been New Year's. Stoked about. And I can't wait to see what they do.
So I meant to bring this up. If your first show at 4 months was at, what was it, 8898, what's the first show that you were conscious for, like that you can actively remember it?
Yeah. So I had one more that I was unconscious for. 12-1 or 12-2. I think it was. Well, it was December of 99, Rochester. There was a Fluffhead there, actually. And I had and Jennifer dances. So I think that's
December 5th.
December 5th, 99?
I think. I'll check it.
Okay. And so I had bragging rights over a lot of people that I saw Fluffhead and Jennifer dances. You know, but I was one. So, again, so that was a weird coincidence that my parents were – had some, like, my cousin was getting married or something. There was some wedding going on in Rochester that was, they were given the invitation like a year in advance, and then Phish announced a Rochester show like that same weekend, and it was like nuts for them. And they were like, oh my god, like how are we that lucky? That was my second show. I have no memory of that, but my first conscious show, that's what I associate a lot of my just like earliest memories with, is 2-28-03 at Nassau Coliseum. And also it's like, it's kind of special because February of 03 was when I first had my first guitar lesson. So
wow.
Both happened in the same month. I had my first guitar lesson in February of 03, and then my first Phish show, well, that I really remember and can like take in a little bit, was 2-28-03. And I know that actually I went through all your episodes to see if it was spoken about, because I knew that was one of the rules. But so that probably would have actually been my first choice, just because that's a super special one. That's my first conscious Phish show.
That one is tough to beat. Find that one. That's a good episode. Coming back to when you learned to play guitar, that was kind of my next question. When did you start, and what's the first song you remember learning to play on guitar?
So February of 03, I was 4 years old. You know, I teach in the same school that I got that first lesson in now. It's great to start early. Now you're learning the alphabet and how to count at the same time as you're learning how to read notes and count rhythm. You're learning just everyday life skills at the same time as you're learning how to read music and play music. So your chances of like being that quote unquote child prodigy are that just like that much more exponential because you're learning it with everything else. First song I remember learning. I mean, it would probably have to be probably like Mary Had a Little Lamb or Twinkle.
That's
Twinkle
one that came to my mind too. Yeah.
Or Bingo or something. First Fish song I remember learning though, I think Dirt. I had to think about it. I could actually probably even fact check it because I do have those really old books at my house. My first guitar teacher did a great job of teaching me how to read notes. He was, you know, really just like instructor, you know? And then my second guitar teacher though, which was probably only a few months later, was a Fish head, coincidentally. And knew that my parents were also Fish heads. So like they, of course, you know, it made sense to teach me some basic Fish lines. So like, I wasn't like necessarily learning like the chords to Dirt and like all the changes and stuff. But I remember learning like, bum, 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 like how to play that on guitar.
Right.
That's, I think that was probably the first one I remember learning as far as Fish go. And, but honestly, Dirt was probably only like five or six songs after Mary Had a Little Lamb. Like it wasn't like that, right. That far moved, you know?
What is your most controversial Fish opinion? It's a safe space here. Don't worry about it.
Lightning round. So I should come up with something like just like off the top of my head.
Yeah. But don't think too hard about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I could come up with other ones, but I mean, there is a lot to be found in the era of 09 to today than a lot of people give credit for. And there's a lot that they do better now than they even did in the 90s, which believe me. And this isn't to be like, oh, this kid's, you know, he's 25. I'm a 1.0 vet. So
that's right.
I can
that's
speak
right.
on this. I can speak on this. This is, but no, this isn't me because obviously most of my shows have been 3.0. As a guitar player who, you know, has looked up to Trey my whole life, thinks every member of Fish is incredible. And as a musician and someone that my favorite era of Fish is probably 94, 95, 96, 93, like any other jaded vet would say, right? Those eras. I think there's they get discredited a lot on things. I think there's things that Trey does at 60 years old that he does better now than when I listen back to things from the 90s. I'm not saying everything is great now. You know, it's not like I will 100% say, like, I have no problem saying like, oh, like they weren't on tonight, you know? Controversial, sure. I think Fish is, there's very, very few bands out there that can do what Fish does today to any caliber.
Next question. You can only attend one, Fish Halloween or New Year's Eve. Which one do you take?
You're asking me in 2023?
However you want to take it. This year. Yeah, let's say they're playing Halloween this year.
I think New Year's because it's about the nostalgia for me and about the traditional aspect for it. Like New Year's happens every year automatically and I go every year. You know, so it's a special tradition. It's funny because I think if we're talking for Fish specifically and the shows I've seen from them, I do think that there is a lower ceiling for New Year's than Halloween, but I think there's a much lower floor for Halloween, meaning that there's a Fish show recently on Halloween that I was like, what the,
you know, I don't think you were alone.
But whereas New Year's, they can deliver sometimes just like a party. You know what I mean? It's the fourth night of the run. they've already put on three amazing shows. And the fourth night, while it's not like a bad show, it's not like they're not like literally like delivering major jams. Because I think a lot of it also has to do with the production aspect. There's a lot of just like they know that there's a time, like very specific times they need things to get done to make sure their gag goes off smoothly, and they're counting down at midnight and everything goes off smooth. So there's that aspect of like, let's go out there and just like play a rock and roll show, which is fun, you know, and it's a party. And then where your money is well spent is from the night, always amazing production that they throw every year. I would say New Year's because it's a traditional aspect. It's nostalgic. It's always a good time. I've never like had a bad time on New Year's. Whereas, I mean, Halloween's amazing. I would go to every Halloween show too. Yeah, I do think there is a lower floor, but a higher ceiling. But a higher ceiling.
That's true.
You can be blown away from a Halloween show, like really blown away.
So I've never asked this question before on the Lightning Round, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to ask this again. Any favorite middle school English memories?
I remember that I would go into English class, and you would always be playing like classic rock, right? So like maybe there would be like some Dead or Zep or Floyd or something. I was always like, oh, this guy's pretty cool, playing cool music. You know, because I mean, nobody, like, I don't remember. Like, I had you for 7th and 8th grade, right? That's the way it worked.
Yes.
2 years ago. I don't think there was really any fish heads my age, 7th and 8th grade, like 11 and 12 years old. So, I mean, I always thought like, oh, this guy's cool. He's playing cool music. But then actually what made me have the question about it, even that young was, I had you in 2010. And I saw Fish at Boardwalk Hall for their Halloween show where they did Little Feet. And I came back in that next week for classes, and you were playing Dixie Chicken or something.
Like, yeah, it sounds right. Fat Man the Band.
Yeah, and I was like, that's a weird coincidence. I don't know. Because I wasn't even like a Little Feet fan, like necessarily at that age, but Fish got me into them actually from playing that album. And like, so I learned all those songs and stuff within the week, probably within that weekend, I probably learned everything. And I was like, wow, this guy's playing Little Feet. I mean, the week after Fish plays, and then maybe, I don't know, maybe like within that time frame, maybe it was like already 2 months in a year later, and you got comfortable enough to play like a llama or something. And I was like,
yeah, eventually, because no one would know it anyway. But what did I know?
Right. So once I heard that first Fish song, I was like, all right, so this guy likes Fish.
And finally, to wrap it all up, the question I ask every guest, what is the weirdest thing you've ever seen at a Fish show?
That's like, were you at the Bader Field shows in 2012?
No, I did not go to the Bader Field shows.
It's like there's like this very distinct memory I have. So I wasn't much older. I was probably freshman year of high school now. So probably like 13. It's one of the nights and you know, it's a big spread out field. So like everybody's just like kind of like spread out, you know, you lose your friends or whatever. Everybody's just, it's one big field, and there's a guy dancing, and then a girl comes running up saying, I lost my friends. Have you seen my friends or something like that? Yeah. Like, or she's like, they just went into Boogie on Reggae Woman. I should start with that. They just went into Boogie on Reggae Woman. And the girl goes to the guy, this is my favorite Fish song. I can't find my friends. And even though it's not a Fish song, but this is my favorite Fish song. I can't find my friends. And then the guy goes, this is my favorite Fish song too. And they just grabbed each other's hands and ran off. Like,
aww.
Nothing I've ever seen. Yeah. Like just like they're probably married now with kids and everything. it was like, she was like frantic. She couldn't find her friends, but they're playing her favorite Fish song. And then the guy's like, oh, it's my favorite Fish song too. And they went off. So that's probably the best non NSFW fish story.
When was this show played?
Well, today's episode is about specifically set 2 of December 31st, 2010 at Madison Square Garden. Jared and I knew that this episode would run a little long. Because we have so much to talk about and catch up on. So we figured when it comes to a 3-set show, why not pick highlights or, you know, one segment of it? And Jared wisely chose the second set. So to take a look at 2010 overall, the 2010 New Year's Eve run was a four-night run. It was split between two venues. So December 27th and 28th were at the Worcester Centrum. And the band was off for a night on the 29th, very unusual. And then December 30th and 31st were at MSG. It should be noted that this broken up New Year's Eve run is what I'll call it, has not occurred since. And Phish has played all but one New Year's Eve show at MSG since then, except for the 2014 show in Miami. 2010, I kind of see it as an up and down year for the band. They had their first year of 3.0 under their belt, so they were back. But they rarely seemed able to like fully relax and let jams grow organically. Trey especially seemed kind of over-reliant on his whammy pedal, which was nicknamed derisively by fans the whale call at the time. It's not exactly like a straight line from evolution from beginning of the year to end of the year, but it seemed like the run at the Greek Theater in Berkeley, California, which was in August. And there was a jam in, I think, the second show on August 6th in Cities, brought the band to this like new level of playing, almost like it was a before and an after. Like after this Cities, they were all playing democratically, spatially, that is, really playing differently than one band member leading it. Trey was able to give the whammy a break every now and again. The sound was able to develop rather than like trying to jam for the second half of the year. They played a fall tour that was full of highlights, including a two-night run in the North Charleston Coliseum, a venue that the band continues to visit. The famous Guy Utica show in where else? Utica, New York. The show of the year, I would argue, October 26th in Manchester, which has been covered on this show, Manchester, New Hampshire. And then what Jared just was talking about, the three-night Halloween run in Atlantic City, which featured all of Waiting for Columbus by Little Feat. So it's fair to say that the band was coming off a hot streak once the New Year's Eve run began. Personally, this was my first New Year's show. I remember walking in to the garden and glancing up and seeing the long sleeves of balloons attached to the ceiling. And I was just, I'm never missing a New Year's Eve run again. And I haven't missed a New Year's Eve run since. But this is not about me. Jared, you are the guest. Where were you on New Year's Eve 2010? Like, what led you to the show? What was your feeling about Phish at the time? And then why do you have attendance bias toward this specific performance?
Yeah, so much like you, this was my first New Year's Phish show, only 2 months after my first Phish Halloween show. So at this point, you know, we talked earlier how, you know, I saw Phish in the 90s, but not conscious. And, you know, 03, I have vague memories of. At this point, you know, now I'm 11 years old, 12 years old, whatever. And Phish is recently back from hiatus. I was born into a Phish household. Phish has ran through my veins since I was born, pretty much. You know, it definitely wasn't a like dragging your kid to a show situation where, you know, that, and that does happen, but like the, not the case here, you know, at all. I cherished every single Phish show I got to go to as a young lad. But 2010 New Year's, yeah, we did the 30th, 31st, and 1st. We didn't do the Worcester shows. I remember streaming. They used to do, like now you just like buy Phish streams and they're like beautiful 4K multicam quality videos, you know, but it used to be like one fan would like hold up their like Razer phone and like you sure. Stream it or something. And like you'd have to go to Ustream to find the stream. I remember this. And like, so I do remember like streaming. I remember streaming the Guy Utica show actually, and like loving it, even though like to my, it's like, it probably sounds so bad, like in terms of like sound quality. I do remember like really, really being into it. But then I do remember streaming the Worcester shows and remembering Trey was hoarse Worcester shows. He was like sick or something, but he wasn't hoarse for the New Year shows.
No, it sounded great.
They didn't have the balloons up though on the, were you at the 30th? Or you?
Yes, they did not. The balloons were only up for the 31st.
Okay, because in years later, they do put up the balloons sometimes on the 30th. You walk in on the 30th. Yeah, I guess just to get out of the way. I don't know. But they have done it on the 30th. And yeah, so I mean, same kind of feelings of like, wow, like, you know, it's something special and cool and all the glow up lights and the, you know, everybody's all like in their New Year's sparkly outfits. And, you know, it was a new experience. I've been to fish shows, lots of fish shows by that point. I don't know exactly how many. That could have been like my 35th or something fish show, but I'd never been to that type of experience yet. So it was new. And up to that point already, there was already rumors of the hot dog. So that had me excited as well. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Brian here to welcome you to the set break of today's episode of Attendance Bias. First, thank you for listening. And second, just a quick reminder to tell you that even though Attendance Bias comes to you for free, it does take a lot of work and it does take quite a bit of money to keep the lights on here at production. So I just wanted to ask a small favor if you could support the podcast in any number of the following ways. If you could leave a review or a rating of it on whichever podcast app you use. If you could spread the word, telling a friend or someone you think may be interested in it about it. Or probably the most concrete way is to go to www.buymeacoffee.com/attendancebias and donate however much you can financially to help with the continuing costs of Attendance Bias. So thank you again so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the second half of today's episode. Well, let's dig into it. So we chose to focus on the second set, but of course, when we get to it, we can't ignore the meat stick around the world. But let's talk about the second set for a bit. It opens with Wilson, which is always a great set opener. It's pretty funny. If you listen to the audience recording, you could hear, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, a vuvuzela, which was became at least famous in America during the World Cup at the beginning of the audience recording. A very loud and powerful performance of Wilson. Fishman is bringing it hard with the drum fills, but it's also a very short version. It's only 4 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yeah, I did a really quick refresh today of this whole set, like literally right before the call, so I could be as fresh in my mind as possible. Solid Wilson. My first impressions, I mean, obviously Wilson's not like the thing that I look back to on this set, you know. My first impression coming out of the gate being that I haven't listened to this set in a little bit, I do listen to it a bunch, like it is one of my favorite Fish sets, is that it is funny to think that that is 3.0 Fish in a weird way, because to a lot of people, like, all they think is like 3.0 Fish when they think 2010, but it's such a different band then, right? So in 2010, people are thinking this is an older, slower version of Fish, even in 2010. Now in 2023, looking back 13 years later, like there's certain characteristics. I am specifically even talking about the Wilson. There's certain characteristics right off the gate from that set starting that gave me certain like 90s Fish. Not like it's not 90s Fish, but like certain like the way, if you watch the video, it's like the way they're it's pretty. It's much more intense and much more energetic than. You might see from Fish in 2023. And again, like I said, there's certain aspects they do better now. But in terms of like that, like kind of like balls and energy, a lot of people probably didn't realize it at the time, 2010. But right off the gate from that set, I feel like they're like latching on to something. Like they're like locked in, like working like balls to the wall.
Yeah, you know? I agree. And it should be noted that the set list, there's only one song that was written after 1.0, and that's 46 Days, which is written in 2.0. There are no 3.0 songs in this set. And after Wilson, like I just said, is 46 Days. And for a long time, I considered 46 Days to be like the most improved song from 2.0 to 3.0. I thought that had the best jump, I guess, is the way to put it. Like they developed this new big time arena rock sound, and 46 Days is a kick-ass arena rock song. And there are strong guitar solos throughout. The even with like Fishman and Trey around 2 minutes are hooked up with some really good rhythm guitar. Trey is an underrated rhythm guitar player, maybe because he doesn't play it often enough. In my opinion, he's so focused on playing lead guitar. But there are extended licks. He lets Paige play the organ. When I say he lets, I mean his rhythm guitar does. And it just, you could hear the liftoff with the crowd exploding at 5 minutes. Like for the unevenness for the beginning of 2010, this 46 Days is 100% a band on top of its game. It's rock and roll game, at least.
It's just straight up rock and roll, you know. I can't imagine like being a fan of rock and roll and being there, you know. Even if you don't like Fish, you don't like jam bands, right? And like, I mean, what how long is it? It's like 7 minutes. That's not super long, right? It's like 6.5, 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's not. It's not like the jam of the year or anything like that.
Yeah, no, but it, like, you know, quote unquote type one. It's really, really good, and it's really locked in, and there's so much energy. And I agree that I kind of remember when 46 – I was never going back to when I was really younger, but when 46 Days came out, I do remember it being just – it was just kind of like a groove kind of type thing where they might have only done it a few times, and in 2.0 and like through like a big – spacey kind of jam on
it. Well, that's really
like
where it went in 2.0, yeah. Especially in the latter half. Like I remember at IT, the festival, there was this, I'll check this time, but it's something like 30 something minutes, almost 40, and 46 Days, it goes into this, like, you don't even know what universe you're in. Like they're all pretense of even being a song with all those definitions and connotations that come with music, it's all out the window. 46 Days has been all over the place. Like you are on a journey if you're going into late 2.0, 46 Days. The band brought it back to its roots in 3.0.
Yeah, they did a double peak in the sense that like, the song like could have ended before they even went back into like the 46 Days, you know, they did like the double time. Get a build. Yep. And then they go into another jam with it too, which is great, and like gardens popping off the roof. Like I do remember it, like everyone going nuts. Those, and we'll probably talk more about it throughout the set, but these were building blocks to what happened a lot throughout 3.0 and 4.0. These were like the original roots to a lot of it. Like that those white light moments, those bliss moments that a lot of people refer to. I mean, 46 days, and then we'll talk about the ghost as well. That 46 days is like the definition of the Kuroda white light moments of Garden going nuts and builds and strobes and, you know, but the band was so locked in too. It's really, it really is a great version.
And they take advantage of that feeling of being locked in when they go into Sand next. When I think back on this set, for me, I mostly remember the You Enjoy Myself, Manteca, You Enjoy Myself. But this Sand, in the moment, before they played You Enjoy Myself, I didn't know it was coming. But in the moment, I thought this Sand was like, this has got to be the jam of the set. Like there's just peak after peak after peak. Like the audience let them know that they were responding about every other minute, it felt like. They were simmering, and then I already mentioned this, but it kind of was like the Greek cities in that way, in that the crowd was drawn in with no peak. Like it was when they were in the groove that the audience responded the most. They're like spontaneous cheers that you don't know why necessarily, but you really just take a seat back and it's just because everyone is on the same wavelength.
I know what you're talking about too. It's like really like as soon as they drop into the jam almost, it's like maybe within the 15 seconds after. Like that is always super cool. I mean, when the crowd is, because the band, it's not like the band doesn't feel it themselves, you know, they are
of course
very much there, you know? So when the crowd can have a role like that, they fall into this very super cool funk groove. And I think a big part of it is just like, it's the last set before the big New Year's set of the, you know, it's the, actually, well, there was one more show left. There was a 1-1, but
that's right.
New Year's Eve, Fish at the Garden, you know, everybody's just enlightened and happy to be there. And they drop into a cool funk groove and the crowd goes nuts. Also another, but also then they carry through it and another great just rock and roll version of a song, you know.
Yeah, toward the end it gets bigger, like Trey takes a detour to, this is my my knowledge of music theory, I wrote he takes a detour to minor key Ville, but it still holds together quite well. The band like kind of follows him, and at about 10 minutes they return to Sand and end it before NICU is kind of our first break. And it's a standard version. He doesn't, he being Trey, it's not exactly very crisp playing for that first riff.
A little less than really standard version, to be totally honest. I throw some back. A little less standard.
Yeah. But it does come in with a pass. Yeah. But it does come in with an Auld Lang Syne tease in the middle of it, which is always fun.
It wasn't at the very end, though. I thought it was at the very
end. Oh, it is at the very end. Yeah, it's closer to 5 minutes. Yeah. But NICU comes and goes. And then they play Down with Disease, which is faster than, to your point, than what I've come to expect in 3.0. Like, they, it's not unlike a 1994 Down with Disease jam. It's very buoyant and rocking for most of the part, most of the point.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I want to keep saying 90s in the sense that, like, because I know there's going to be someone that's like, oh, they don't know what the 90s are like. But 90s in the sense that there was more, I guess just more energy and more just like looseness compared to later. But that, yeah, they're very loose in the Down with Disease. I mean, I enjoy a lot of songs in that set more than the Down with Disease, but it's a loose version.
And it's good. It's good enough. I'm surprised it isn't on the jam charts, but I also understand why it doesn't have to be. But the big highlight and probably the most famous part of this set comes up next with Ghost, which was termed almost immediately the Holy Ghost.
That is like the reason why I picked this set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on.
That's like one of like my first like real like introductions to amazing improvisation as a musician, someone that has seen live concerts all their life. I have very specific like visual memories of that ghost, of like the flashing white lights that Crota was doing. I remember the crowd around me also at that show was like very good dancing, and you know, it's a very good section. Obviously, I'm 11 years old. I'm not on anything.
I hope not.
You know? So I think, you know, I could speak pretty well on the actual music itself. You know, I remember it just being very like, this is what live music is, you know, something that does, they're completely removed from the ghost, right? That main jam that everybody knows from the 123110 Ghost doesn't sound anything like Ghost, and they got to it so naturally, without anything sounding forced. And it's not even a super long version, right? 13 minutes.
Right? Yeah, I wrote that. My last timestamp note was, "Fuck yes, rock and roll," at 12 and a half minutes, and then they bring it back down.
Yeah, I don't think it went much far above 13. Whereas there are fish jams that are don't do much for me that are 35 minutes. There's a 13-minute ghost that there wasn't a single dull moment in the entire thing. Was for a lot of people, I also think you did mention the Greek cities earlier. Mm-hmm. That's a big 2010 version of a song, but I think that ghost for a lot of people also like gave that like fish can produce, you know, after their time off, you know, and not just like because a lot of people were either come back and just kind of like play regular songs as like a nostalgia act and sort of way and like not really care so much to the jams, which I think looking back on now is a little ridiculous to think about, but considering what they've done for us in the last 14 years.
But yeah, to be that, there.
Yeah,
that good. It was, you know, people came back with crazy expectations and Fish was playing in recital mode for a lot of 2009, like getting loose, relearning a lot of their music.
Yeah.
And then like you just said, this song, I mean, with highlights before, but this performance of Ghost, you know, a fan favorite, an all-time jam vehicle, just stamped it and said, yeah, we're not learning anymore. Like, we're not learning how to come back anymore. We are back.
Right, right. They gave an epic version of a song at that show that, you know, I think that Ghost is, like I said earlier with the 46 Days, that I think there are jams since then, right, that Fish does that are almost pretty similar to it. You know, I don't, not to, but there are like that came, that Ghost kind of like opened the door into a lot of those major key Bliss jams that yep. they do. You know, and there's a lot of good ones. You know, I'm always happy to see those things live and embrace them in the moment. Those big white light moment Bliss major key jams, they're fun. But when it happens for the first time in the era and like really went to another level, you know, it makes that version more special than whatever version of Carini there might have been in 2013, you know. So that goes to great, you know, it was something new for that time. Arguably if it happened in 2023, would it be as special? I don't know, because there's a lot of jams now that resemble that jam, you know. Yeah. So
I agree. Yeah, it set a trend and it was novel. And they didn't do a lot of that Bliss jamming in 2011, but it made a big comeback in 2012. So it did certainly set a sort of trend that like music, like these big Bliss jams can come from anywhere. And like you said earlier, it doesn't have to resemble the song from which it came. And speaking about Bliss, we're already at the end of the set where they play You Enjoy Myself, Manteca, Back Into You Enjoy Myself. And I got to tell you, this is a standard version of You Enjoy Myself. But my biggest memory of this portion of the set was whoever had the first row of the 200 level, which I guess is page side, had an enormous banner. All three, well, I guess it was just the 30th. What's that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Right. Yeah.
And it just said Manteca in enormous letters with a question mark. And during You Enjoy Myself, at around 10 minutes, they cool down after a really fun synthesizer during the bass and drums part. They cool down a little bit. And that's when the first teases of Manteca show up and they go right into it. It was my first version of it. The crowd loves it immediately. And the big sign, they reached the question mark, they pulled it away and they replaced it with an exclamation point. And I thought to myself, holy shit, those guys came ready. Like they were asking for Manteca, but they were ready to receive Manteca also. Grab the shoebox.
I never, actually never knew that part of it. I know what you're talking about. I remember seeing the Manteca sign. I never knew that part of it. I didn't know they replaced the question mark.
Yeah, and as an English teacher, I love it. It went from Manteca to Manteca.
Yeah, yeah.
And the crab in my shoe mouth just became kind of a fun refrain during the stop-start motif when they went back into You Enjoy Myself.
It's definitely it's great. I remember loving it, and it was a great cap off to that great set. But now it's like it was they recently. I don't think they've done Manteca, or at least it hasn't been counted in a long time, right? It's probably been a long time.
I'll have to check. Well, we're not going to go deep into the third set, but I will say this meat stick gag, the meat stick around the world. I personally think that as far as their theatricality goes, I think this is the best one. Musically, yeah. I like the gem set, but as far as like a show, a big visual gag, I'm here with the meat stick around the world.
Yeah, it's for me, obviously it set a standard, you know, in terms of it's my first New Year's show, and they definitely came out hard with that, you know, as the gag. I've never really been disappointed with any of the New Year's gags that I've been at personally. Attendance bias.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it was great. I mean, it was already amazing, and then they took out the hot dog, and I was like, oh, I'm at the hot dog show, you know, being 11 years old and getting to see the hot dog, you know, so that was great. It was elaborate, like all the dancers, everything, the massive balloon drop after midnight. My first New Year's show was last year. I thought last year's gag was amazing. It was a clip show, but I thought it was awesome and put a lot of unique, so much production must have went into that and planning. I have so much respect for that as someone that plans smaller extravaganzas, you know. Like if that was my first show, I would have been like, my first New Year's, I'd probably been like, that's the best ever. Yeah. So, you know, that one being 12/31/10 being my first New Year's, like, yeah, it's easy for me to say, yeah, the 12/31/10 meat stick gag is like nothing's ever gonna top that. But they always bring it. They always treat their fans to an amazing production.
Well, Jared, thank you so much. It was an honor, a pleasure. And you know what? Most teachers in this position would probably say it was weird. I didn't feel that way at all. It was so natural. It's so great to catch up with you. And I'm so happy that we can speak to one another as equals, as fans. And, you know, this made my week, and it's only Monday night. So thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're always busy. I'm sure you're going off on a tour in the next 48 hours or so. But again,
70 hours.
All right. Yeah. I was off by a little, but close. But just one more time, give everyone a little bit of a plug. Tell everyone where they can find Big Shrimp Music and how they can keep track of the band when they're going to be near anyone's town.
Yeah, BigShrimpMusic.com is our website, Facebook.com/BigShrimpMusic. You can find our new self-titled album on Spotify. Hopefully the Prono Tapes Volume 2. I think it's going to be there, but we'll find it. We'll find out soon enough. Yeah, BigShrimpMusic.com/tour has all of our tour dates. Hopefully we're coming near you, and if not, then send us an email, an angry email. We'll get to it.
Thanks again, Jared.
You got it. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's it for today's episode with Jared Cowan of Baked Shrimp. And since we were kind of all over the place, let's double check our facts and figures with today's attendance bias fact check.
Attendance bias fact check.
The 1999 Rochester show was on December 5th of that year. Little Jared was lucky enough to witness the debut of Jennifer Dances and an unusual Mike song into Meat Stick into Hydrogen and closing with Weka Paw Groove. The attendance bias episode about February 28th, 2003 was way back toward the debut of this podcast. It is with publisher of The Recount, Slade Somer, and it's one of my favorite episodes of this podcast ever, so please check it out if you haven't heard it yet. Phish played Bader Field in Atlantic City on June 15th, 16th, and 17th, 2012. Despite being set up for a festival atmosphere, the shows and the venue received lukewarm reviews from fans, and Fish would revisit Atlantic City about 16 months later for the Halloween wingsuit set at Boardwalk Hall. 46 Days from the It Festival has an official timing of 38 minutes and 43 seconds. It is a monster, a must-hear for sure. Jared suggested that the ghost from this show is about 13 minutes, and he is spot on. The official timing is 13 minutes and 54 seconds. The version of Manteca played at MSG this show was the first one since October 30th, 1998, a gap of 301 shows. At the time of this recording, it was last played on February 22nd, 2022 in Cancun, Mexico. And to wrap it all up, don't forget, Big Shrimp's album release party is on Friday, January 12th at the Cutting Room in Manhattan. Hope to see you there. And that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank Jared Cowan for joining me today. Fish.net for its help with the fact check, and the Mockingbird Foundation for everything it does to help music education. I'd also like to thank Fish.in for the recording used in today's episode. If you enjoy Attendance Bias, please support the show by leaving a rating and a review of it on your favorite podcast app. You could also go to www.buymeacoffee.com/attendancebias and donate anything you can. Thank you so much again for listening, and I'll see you next time on Attendance Bias. Thank you.